Welcome to another episode of Capital Connection. As always, I'm your host, Matt Calder, and we're glad to have you on the show. If you caught the show last week, you know that over the weekend, we were catching a lot of interviews or collecting a lot of interviews at the Civitas Institute Conservative Leadership Conference. Of course, the Civitas Institute being the sponsor for the show, but we are a product of the Civitas Institute over at the Freedom Action Network, and of course, Capital Connection, and ccapitalconnection.com, the website that state political news website that I also work on, all that in one family. And in that vein, we got a lot of great access to great interviews that we were able to get over the weekend for the show. And we will be rolling those out to you over the next couple few weeks, getting those interviews out for the show. But on today's show, we're going to start off with the headliner for the conference. You know, he was the headliner for Friday night's keynote address at dinner, and he will be the person we start our series of shows on interviews from the Conservative Leadership Conference with, and that is Dennis Prager of Prager University, PragerU. You may have seen it like that online on YouTube. That is Dennis Prager. He's an author. He has his own radio show. He does his Prager University videos, teaching people about different conservative principles in quick 2-3 minute videos that are available online. There's dozens of these things available, and if you have some time to sit down on YouTube and watch them, go and search PragerU. You'll find them on a whole host of different topics. And again, that is Dennis Prager, and he will be the one we start off our show with today. Then we'll be talking with Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, of course, of North Carolina's Lieutenant Governor. We actually had Prager and Forrest in the room at the same time during the interview. So in Prager's interview, you'll hear a reference to Lieutenant Governor, or him shoot off to Lieutenant Governor real quick, and then during the Lieutenant Governor's interview, I think you'll actually hear a little bit of mentioning of the Prager interview. So we thought it'd be a good idea to definitely pair those together for our first show coming from the Conservative Leadership Conference. But before we get to that, I definitely want to make a quick call for social media, or to get you to follow our social media, and that's on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at NC Capital Connection, or NC Capcon. It's at NC Capcon. And that's on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at NC Capcon, or by searching Capital Connection or NC Capital Connection, and you'll get to the social media for the show as well as the website nccapitalconnection.com. And that will give you a mix of both our radio show material and also our state political news generation material. So you'll get kind of both sides of it. A lot of the commentary on policy side on the radio show, and more of the straight news on the other side at nccapitalconnection.com. And again, that is Facebook, Twitter, and now also Instagram at nccapcon, or search NC Capital Connection or Capital Connection. You'll find it there. Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and keep up with what's going on outside of the show. So without any further ado, we'll get to our segment with Dennis Prager. So first, thank you for joining us on the show, Dennis.
Thank you for having me.
So we have definitely a few things we want to talk to you about, but I wanted to start off with kind of the reason why we've got you here for the interview. The reason why you're here in North Carolina on, you know, the Capital Connection show is you're here for the Civitas Conservative Leadership Conference as the keynote speaker for the conference. And I kind of want to, this is, you know, if we're recording this before you've gone up on stage, and I want to get a little preview of where you're at before you go on stage. What do you want to convey tonight to the people here?
Well, I can tell you that in a nutshell. They've asked me to speak on any aspect of freedom that I would like. So I have a very different take, but I do believe it was the take of the founders. But I do have a different take on freedom than most people in the world even. And that is, I don't believe that people yearn for freedom as much as most people think. If people yearned for freedom, the left wouldn't have been as popular in the last 100 years as it is. People yearn to be taken care of much more than they yearn to be free. Therefore, freedom is not a yearning. Freedom is a value. And you either value it or you don't value it. And increasingly, Americans do not value it. Whether it is the right, I smoke cigars. Where I live in California, very near Burbank, you can't smoke a cigar in a cigar store. That's astonishing. But it doesn't bother people that that was taken because it was done in the name of health. Even if one willingly, as I would say, I don't give a damn about secondhand smoke. You're driving me crazy. This is all hysteria, which it is. I have medical basis. I'm not a doctor, but I have medical evidence for that. It doesn't kill 50,000 people. We live in a state of hysteria. Parents are no longer letting their kids play in the sand. The kids have so much less freedom today than when I was a kid. I grew up in a different America than the one that exists. It would be unidentifiable. I bought my mother cigarettes at 8. Now, I'm not saying that that's the right thing to allow, although I'm ambivalent. My point is simply that we took freedom for granted. And freedoms are, you know, they're very, I'm giving you little examples because freedom is composed of little examples. You want a big example? There is so much less freedom on a U.S. campus today than there was when I was, when I was a kid, it was already dying. When my father was at the City College of New York. There's the freedom to speak. Your mind is dying. Almost 50% of American college kids don't believe in freedom of speech for, quote, hate speech, which is, of course, idiotic. The only time free speech comes into being an issue is with regard to what I think is hate speech. What is there, free speech for love speech? I mean, they don't understand the absurdity of their comment. Oh, I believe in free speech, but not for hate speech. You don't believe in free speech. And you name the arena. The mayor of New York wanted to charge a fortune of money for large sodas. I mean, it's Americans are supine on all of these issues. Oh, well, that's helped. That's good for health. Oh, that's good because it hurts people's feelings. Oh, that removal of my right is mandating what type of car I drive. Oh, well, that's global warming. There's always a reason. The left always has a reason to deprive you of freedom. And by the way, the car is an example of freedom. And they hate the car. They hate it. They want you and me to be in buses and trains. The left, which is the anti, it's always been anti-liberty. The left loathes liberty, except sexual liberty. And I guess abortion liberty. But that's basically it. So we're in trouble because being that there isn't a universal longing for freedom, if we don't teach it as a primary value, it will die, and it is dying.
Right. You touched on a lot in there.
I gave you my speech.
Yeah,
so I really don't feel a need to go up there now.
I can take the recording and I can just play
it. Okay, that's perfect.
I'll take the recording and I'll just play it over the loudspeaker.
Yes.
You can hang out.
I'll take questions.
There you go. You can hang out, eat your dinner, with everybody else, and then just kind of walk up and answer the questions. It'll be great. But I want to touch on the community planning. Is you didn't say community planning, but the push for mass transit, where they want to build communities around these rail lines. They want to have people on buses and not using cars. And that's something that it was an aha moment for me when I was sitting there from my point of view thinking about this, going, why would they want to put in trains? You put a train track down, you can't move it. At least if you're talking about buses, you can change the bus route to go where people need to go and where they are. And that's when I had that aha moment with someone in the office said they want the people to go where they want them to go, to be where they want them to be.
They want to Manhattanize every city. That's what they're doing now in L.A., where I live. They want large apartment buildings built. And if you live within a certain perimeter of a train station, subway station, or bus, then you should not drive. They are mandating that fewer parking spaces be built. In both apartment buildings and in strip malls. You have that term here, strip mall?
Yes.
Okay. I never know if it's California-based, and I don't want to be provincial. So you name the arena, you know what you would have to pay a man in the United States to say to a woman, you really look sexy? Do you understand? He thinks he will go to jail if he says that. I mean, to give you an idea, there is no arena of life. I mean, if he said it in the nicest way, I mean, not leering, not vulgar, in the nicest way, you are one sexy woman. I was thinking about this coming down here. I was talking to my wife, and we were mentioning that, you know, they're called the greatest generation, the men who fought in World War II. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for example, virtually every airplane, every bomber, every fighter had a pinup girl painted on it. That'd be inconceivable today. Inconceivable. And it, but it gave the guys, you know, some sort of sustenance, as it were, in doing. And, you know, the death toll in the air raids was horrific. But today, you know, the thought of a pinup on a bomber, a guy who painted that would would be court-martialed. As I said, there is no arena of life in America that is not less free than when I was a child.
Right, and in that same vein, I think about these pictures you see of messages written on bombs, you know, the Merry Christmas, the Happy Easter, and then other messages that are written on these bombs that are going to be dropped. And I always wonder why, you know, how long would this last? How long can this go before someone goes, you can't be writing these mean messages on these bombs that we're literally going to drop on people.
No, of course not. Anyway, Happy Easter would run into the same problem as Merry Christmas.
Well, of course, Happy Holidays on a bomb.
Yeah,
then.
So we're politically correct. Well, maybe Happy Holidays on the bomb. That might be okay.
And then the other thing I want to touch on from your was the talking about people don't yearn for freedom. And it's funny, I fell into this Netflix show that I started binge watching when I had some time recently. It's Sons of Anarchy. It's about the motorcycle club and everything, and they're outlaws and all this. But there was one thing that it hit on exactly what you were saying about how people think they want freedom, but really they just want the freedom to be secure and feel secure and feel safe, and they don't really want freedom. And that seemed like where you were going, that people have lost the definition of what real freedom is.
They've not only lost the definition. I'm telling you, I don't even think that they would. I don't think if you ask them that, you know, do you really want freedom? They would ask you, give me an example. And in every example, they would say, no, I'd rather have, you name it. I'd rather have security. I'd rather have my feelings not hurt. I mean, it's endless. It's the American experiment is in true jeopardy. It's as simple as that. It's just in jeopardy. And, you know, what did Franklin say? It's a republic if you can keep it. And we kept it for, you know, let's see, 1776 to about 1960. And beginning in the 60s, we decided we didn't want it. The left is European. It is the battle is between the French Revolution and the American Revolution. And the French Revolution is much more in keeping with human nature. The American Revolution is not. So, you know, big government definitionally deprives you of freedom. The bigger the government, the less free you are. That's definitional. And people vote for those who will have a bigger government. They vote for them. Not just America. I mean, Latin America, there's not even an issue. America has been the one exception. But it's not. It's increasingly not the exception. And it's a very tough battle when the entire media and entire academia is aligned with a political party. It's tough going.
So what happened in 1960 that brought about this change or accelerated at this you know time frame from 1776 to 1960, and then from you know the relatively short time frame
there,
now from 1960?
My parents' generation, I'm a baby boomer, my parents' generation did not teach my generation American values. They thought they would imbibe them by osmosis. So they didn't sit down and teach them about the founders, about the Constitution, about the Bible. They just didn't. They were interested in not having their kids suffer a depression or suffer going to war. Those were their two concerns. They blew it. The greatest generation produced the most selfish generation in American history.
So they were worried about messing up and having these lessons from hardships they'd gone through passed on.
That's all they cared about. I want to give my children everything I didn't have. That was their motto. I didn't have peace and I didn't have money. I want my kids to have peace and money. So they got peace and money. That's exactly right. And they're the spoiled brats. Not all, obviously, but a great many.
Right. And you mentioned in there that one of the things they didn't pass on was knowledge of the Bible. And that kind of segues us nicely into your book that is now come out, your new book, on Exodus. It's the Rational Bible, focusing on the book of Exodus. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Right. That's correct. It's going to be 5 volumes on the first 5 books of the Bible. I've been teaching it all my life, and I know Biblical Hebrew very, very well, which is not enough, but is necessary to write a serious commentary on it. But look, when I was on Book TV for their 3-hour special they have every month with an author, they ask you the 5 books that most influenced you. I began with the Bible. And, you know, most people on Book TV don't say the Bible. So this explains why it is, and I'll just give one example. I open up my introduction with this story. When I was a young guy in my late teens and 20s, I had issues with my parents, which is hardly revolutionary. Who doesn't? Most people do. But I left my parents' home to live on my own at the age of 21. There was never a week that I did not call my parents in their whole life till their deaths in their 90s. There wasn't a week. Doesn't matter where I was in the world, I called them. And there was a reason. It was because I believed God, not Moses, not a bunch of authors, said honor your father and mother. It doesn't say honor your father and mother if you're in love with them. It just says honor your father and mother. No asterisk. Since I take this stuff seriously, no matter what my ambivalence emotionally was, I honored my parents. People don't have that anymore. They go by their feelings. Well, you know, I'm angry at my parents. I won't talk to them. It's a crisis in America, by the way. Kids not talking to parents. I mean, adults not talking to their parents. It's an epidemic that nobody talks about.
Right, and I mean, not to get too much into my own stuff that I, personal, but I see that in my own family and in some aspects of the family where it seems like that's not happening. And then I have my wife and I, we've agreed to do these family dinners every week with all sides of the family. And
that's wonderful.
I see the benefit for us and for my daughter as well.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, that's the amazing thing. I'm totally proud of this. I admit it. And I've written 8 other books. I never spoke about any of my other books, and I love them all. They're like children. But this I have an emotional attachment to, because if the Bible doesn't become relevant to Americans, then we're doomed. And so the fact is, this is the number 2 bestseller in the country. That a Bible commentary is the number 2 bestseller, it's the last thing I expected. I am beyond belief delighted. And I think it speaks to a few things. One of them is a yearning for meaning, because the left has stripped people of meaning. And what it's done is it's removed Judeo-Christian religions and substituted leftist religions. Feminism, humanism, environmentalism are examples. But they're not really sustaining. They're anger-producing. I mean, show me a non-angry feminist and I'll show you a Republican.
All right. And I hate to cut it short, but we're running out of time. But I would like to, can you tell them where they can find your book?
Well, obviously Amazon, any bookstore, even Costco is selling it. How's that? Bible commentary at Costco.
How many?
I hit the jackpot or what?
How many copies do you have to buy of it at Costco? I know that's how they do things. You buy a pallet of them and you get a discount.
Oh, that's hilarious. I hadn't thought of that. You know, as you're getting, 12 pounds of butter, sticking 3 pounds of my book.
There you go.
The book weighs 3 pounds. That may be one book.
All right. Well, thank you for being on.
It's a pleasure.
So, Lieutenant Governor, thanks for joining us on Capital Connection.
Thanks for having me on.
So, you're a old hat at coming out to the CLCs now. I know you've been to a few of them at least now.
I think this is my third or fourth, but I can't remember. I was trying to remember this morning how many I've actually done, and I was actually trying to remember what I talked about, because I'll mention this when I talk tonight. But you tend to go to a conservative leadership conference and talk about the same things. You know, I mean, it's just kind of the way it works. When you're talking about founding principles and you're talking about the basics of America, we're not getting any closer to getting it right. And so you feel like you have to keep hammering the drum, you know, banging the cymbal for the same types of principles that we've been talking about year over year. But I think you just have to keep doing that.
Right. And especially a year apart, you know, I don't know what I had for lunch last Friday.
Yeah.
If I did something a year ago and I come back to the same conference, you know, a whole year separation there, it's a pretty good likelihood I'll go, what should I talk about?
Yeah,
that sounds like a good idea.
I don't rehash my old speeches, so I don't even look them up. I used to do that, but then I'd find myself falling into some same old patterns. I'd rather talk about whatever's on my heart for the day. That's just kind of the way I do it. You know, whatever's kind of leading me, my heart and my mind, whatever the Lord's just saying, hey, this is an important thing right now, or I feel that's an important thing to talk about. That's kind of what I do. And I just don't worry about repeating things, because, again, I think sometimes, you know, that you have to repeat things multiple times, sometimes for many years. You know, you just had Dennis Prager on here. Dennis Prager's been talking about the same things for decades now, right? And he's finally, I think, probably just getting his feet underneath him with being a mouthpiece for the, you know, reasonable conservative, right? And so it takes a long time to say the same things to sometimes be heard.
Right, definitely. I mean, I just think about all the things that I was told my entire life coming up, that finally you get the aha moments when you've heard it, I don't know how many times. So tonight, you know, we're talking to you before you are going to take the stage here at the conference. What's on your heart? What's on your heart for this conference?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple things. My presentation is going to be fairly short tonight. I really want to hear Dennis Prager speak, so I'm the warm-up act tonight. So I'll be fairly brief, at least brief for a politician. So we'll see how that goes. But one, I think we have a bigger problem starting to develop in America over the last decade that is, it's actually based on a book by Jocko Lewis, who wrote The Political Illusion actually back in the 50s, and he was a French sociologist and philosopher. But just talking about how... you know, in France at the time, but he was talking about America too, how politics was the center, the focus of everything. And people really believe that they can solve all of their problems through the government and through political solutions. And we're seeing that at a rapid pace in America today. And it's not just the left. You know, it's the right as well is jumping onto that bandwagon, and we make every problem out there that we can find, we point to the government and say, how are you going to help us? How are you going to fix this? That's a problem. We have to address that. I think the way we do that is by getting back to the basics. You know, returning to founding principles, looking back to, I believe, the principles upon which the principles are founded. And so we may look to the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution and say, these are our founding principles. But if we don't know the principles upon which those principles were created, then we're in trouble. So I think, you know, even like we were sitting here listening to Dennis Prager talk about his book, the commentary on the Bible, because he knows that's what it really takes. It takes some moral standard. You know, we have to return to a value system in America that formed this country. That value system was formed upon the foundation of a biblical worldview. And if we don't return to that, then there really is no long-term hope. I mean, we're not going to do it through secular humanism. We're not going to do it because we believe we're all good. We're going to do it because we know we're all flawed, and we need to look in the mirror first, and we need to fix ourselves first, and then we need to love our neighbors and take care of our neighbors and do all the things personally that the government's not equipped to do and, quite frankly, can't do to solve those problems. So that's kind of the solution. And then I think the call to action is really, what do we do? And I think that's built upon a biblical foundation too, to be salt and light to the world. You know, salt is as a preservative. That's what when Jesus talked about it on the Sermon on the Mount, he was talking about preserving culture and preserving this new order, the way of Christianity moving forward. So he was talking about being salt to the world, and then light. And light shines into darkness, and it eliminates it. It doesn't light it up. It eliminates darkness. And so I think we're called to be salt and light in the community. And if we do those things, we will see the same results that they saw back in the Acts 2 church, where there were no needs among the people. It wasn't about the government. It wasn't about corporate social responsibility. It wasn't about welfare programs. It wasn't about any sort of thing that the government did. It wasn't about marches on Washington and all these things that really feel good. It was about people helping people. It was about getting down and dirty, getting your hands dirty, right? So we got to stop looking to the government to solve our problems, and we need to start looking to the source that formed this nation.
Right, and so you went the biblical route there. You talked about the foundations of our founding documents. I thought you might be about to go the Skip Stam route and bring up the Magna Carta. So it was interesting.
Well, you could do that too. Certainly, you could do that. But no, I'm really talking about the worldview principles that that founded. I mean, you can certainly go back and you know, if we're talking about Western civilization, you can go back to Greek culture as well. But I'm really talking about the biblical foundations. I believe that God in His grace and mercy ordained the success of this nation for a period of time. And in the 60s, we turned our back on God, and we have walked away from Him. And I think not everybody, of course. There's still plenty of people here who don't do that, and that's those are the folks that I believe are going to make the difference. They're going to be the light into this community. And I think that these experiments of the left right now are going to fail. I mean, we've seen them before. We saw them in the 60s. We've seen them time and time again. And so they're going to fail. And when they do, when there is no hope, when there's hopelessness in the world, where's everybody going to look? They're going to look to the light. They're going to look to the hope. Where's the true hope? And I believe that the faith-based community's got to step up. They have to step up and be ready to respond.
Right, and I think that'll be very well received by this crowd, and will be a good pairing with Dennis Prager. And so you called yourself the warm-up for Dennis Prager, you know, the first taste, the first step. And I want to touch off that just to talk about something I want to talk about, that maybe the lieutenant governor is the warm-up for a run for the governor in 2020. And is that the case? Is that going to happen?
That could be the case. You'll have to wait and see. Yeah, I mean, we're warming up, obviously. You know, I mean, I'm term limited. That's what I tell everybody. We this is my last term as lieutenant governor, and you know, we're building the foundation. We're kind of setting a framework to do that, and at the right time, if that's the right thing to do, that's what we're going to do. So we're laying all the groundwork and the foundation for a run. So we'll see what happens.
And I mean, you're right. That's a project or a project that starts not in 2019, definitely not in 2020. That starts now. So you kind of got to get going if you are going to get running.
Yeah.
And
nothing changes for us. I mean, you know, quite honestly, we've been doing the same thing for 6 years. It's not like our methodology about how we do our job and how we serve the people in North Carolina changes. We spend a lot of time on the road. We travel the state every day. We're going from coast to coast all the time. And that's just what we do, you know. So I don't really consider that campaigning. I consider it my job and getting out and meeting the people and, you know, sticking your ear to the rail and see what makes people tick in the mountains and what makes people tick in the Piedmont and what makes them tick on the coast. And it's a vast geography, and obviously it's a huge state, right? 10 million people. That's quite a state. And so it takes a long time to get out there and shake hands and, you know, meet people, kind of do the old fashioned type of politicking. And, you know, obviously that turns into a campaign. I mean, you're doing all the foundational things that lead to a campaign, and you're always raising money in politics. That's just part of the thing you do, you know, and unfortunately, but it is what it is. So that continues to move forward as well.
And I think that a lot of people expected this to be the year you would run for governor. I mean, of course, had Governor McCrory won, he would be serving his second term in the, you know, term limit, and he would be going out. And people kind of expected, if in that arc, you to be the next one, I think, in that slot. With, of course, Governor McCrory losing his reelection to Governor Cooper, and now there's talk of, you know, former Governor McCrory taking another run in 2020, possibly. Where do you land on that? What do you think about that?
You know, it really won't affect our decision, and no matter who would run, you know, we would anticipate there'd be a primary regardless. That, you know, it really doesn't matter to us. It doesn't change anything we do. We just keep marching forward. We can't control or predict who might get in the race or who doesn't get in the race. You know, we have very strong support across the state, and we'll continue to garner that support as we move forward.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on Capital Connection.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you to everyone for being on the show. Thank you to you, the listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Capital Connection. We're glad to have you. We hope you feel more connected to your capital. And again, also want to put out a call there for social media to get you on there if you're not. And you can keep up what's going on with the show. You can see what's going on more of the straight news side of Capital Connection at nccapitalconnection.com. You can catch a lot of that on the social media. And that is going to be at NCCapCon, NCCAPCONN, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And like I said, again, I hope you feel more connected to your capital, and we'll catch you next time.